It used to be that people lived on dozens of the low-lying islands in the Chesapeake, raising crops, grazing livestock, and culling the bay's vast bounty of sea life and waterfowl.
They endured much, these islanders.
Mosquitoes rising in clouds from the marshes, summer squalls filled with lightning and waterspouts, howling winter nor'westers, and loneliness most of all. Still, they built farms and villages that thrived for generations. Then, starting about 1900 and culminating a few years either side of World War I, most of them fled for the mainland. They left behind James Island, at the mouth of Maryland's Little Choptank River, which had once boasted 20 houses, a church, a school, and a boatyard. What spurred the exodus is plain on modern charts of the Middle Bay. Water has whittled James to three tiny islets. It is fast becoming a shoal. Settlers quit Sharp's Island, not far to the south, which had stretched across 449 acres before the Civil War and was still big enough to merit a three-story hotel and a steamship pier in the 1890s. 60 years later, it was the size of a small bedroom. By 1963, it had vanished completely. They abandoned Holland Island, which in 1900 was home to 253 people and big, fine houses shaded by hardwoods. It had its own two-room school, church, and post office, along with several stores and a large fishing fleet, and a first-rate baseball diamond and a team said to be among the best on the bay. Today, watermen pull crab pots from water a fathom deep over the infield. The bay toppled Holland's sole surviving house in 2010, and is now poised to erase the final vestige of the island's long human presence, a cluster of headstones rising from a shrinking patch of marsh grass. Worrisome ghosts, those places for Uker Eskridge, speeding across the water toward his crab pots in the chill of a daybreak in May 2016. 3 miles off to the east, silhouetted against first light, lurks a closer reminder of nature's restlessness, a backdrop to most of his workdays. Fishermen and farmers lived on Watts Island for more than 100 years, grazing cattle and sheep. At its height, it boasted a village of 20-odd houses and a small church. 40 years ago, when Uker began following the water full-time, Watts was a long, fat crescent of high ground, much of it wooded and overrun with goats descended from its farming days. Right before his eyes, Watts has since dissolved away, and now a fragment of island and swooning straggle of pines seems to shrink by the day. Just 300 yards to starboard is more poignant evidence. Only two of the bay's offshore islands remain peopled today, and here is one of them, Tangier, Uker's birthplace, the only home he's known, fast disappearing itself. His people have lived here since 1778. The island is dotted with the graves of his ancestors, some of whom he shares with Carol Moore, some with his wife, some with most every Tangier man he encounters in the course of a typical day. In his youth, he assumed he'd live out his years here, working the water into old age as his father did, his father's father, his great-grandfather's, until he earned a final rest beside them in the soupy island ground. That's no longer a safe assumption. He steers his 20-foot privateer toward a bright blue styrofoam buoy bobbing in the water, cuts the outboard to idle, and leans over the side to snag the marker with a boat hook. The float is connected by 24 feet of nylon line to a wire mesh cube resting on the bottom 8 feet down. He pulls in the line hand over hand until the crab pot breaks the surface, then lifts it aboard. Why it's called a pot is anyone's guess. It's more a cage, but by any name it works. A half dozen crabs crouch inside. He springs open the pot's top, shakes the crabs out onto a wooden tray, refastens the top, and tosses the pot overboard. With a tap on the throttle, we ease toward another buoy 30 yards away.